We are back on the Fighters Block. My name is Joe Gilp, and joined as always by my co-host Jesse Rivas. Jesse, we are just coming off of a huge week of fights. I'm feeling great. I'm on a little bit of edibles. I'm a little drunk, and I'm ready to podcast. We had a fantastic week. There was great fights, great main events, great moments. But what I want to start talking about first is the knockout of the year contender, and I can't imagine it's going to get beat this year. Povetkin knocking out Dillian White and kind of ending this little mini quest that Dillian White was on. What do you think?
What a huge statement. I mean, if you look at the fight and you see Povetkin gets knocked down, he gets knocked down again, and then you see him staring across one of the greatest finishers in all of boxing, Dillian White, and he's coming, he's hungry, he came out to Back in Black as he has before every single fight post-AJ, post his Anthony Joshua loss. And he's Back in Black, he's dressed in black, he's angry, he's coming for the finish, and then an uppercut from hell just comes and derails his huge comeback.
Man, it was unbelievable. It was the punch of the year. It splits the guard perfectly. It wasn't like Dillian White was necessarily doing anything wrong. Povetkin just did something crazy, crazy right. And he was kind of, you know, they said on the broadcast, I think it rang true, he was kind of like a round away from retirement. It looks like, because he was about to get finished. He was only getting into deeper and deeper water. He's the older guy, so the fight going longer does not necessarily benefit him. And at the very end of his rope, he finds the shot. It's why we love boxing, right? Because there's always the chance.
I disagreed with that. I thought that going into the fight, the biggest fear for me was the later rounds for Dillian White. I thought in the later rounds, I see Dillian White get sloppy. He doesn't look as sharp in the later rounds. The discipline of Povetkin. Povetkin's dangerous from round 1 to 12. He's never faded.
Against Michael Hunter, he faded. He's an older guy.
He is an older guy.
And so I think there's cause for concern for him as well. I wouldn't bank on him as his team. I wouldn't build a plan to say, okay, we're going to win these late rounds. Because I wouldn't have the confidence to say he's definitely going to be able to do that.
Yeah, Povetkin's been on top of the heavyweight division. He's been, I think, top 10 or top 5 since 2004.
This is his biggest win in a long time, too. This is a real win, and it sets him up as, what, the WBA number one
WBC.
Contender? WBC number one contender.
He's next in line to fight Anthony Joshua.
Yes.
But they've already said, the WBC and everyone has put out tweets that if Dillian White had won, then he's the mandatory. He's next. He's more than earned it. If Povetkin wins, then he can linger around as a number one contender for a while, but they're going to go ahead and open it up for Joshua to fight someone else, like a Tyson Fury unification.
I think that's the right move. I think that's ultimately the right move. It's the right move for boxing. It's got a really hot heavyweight division. To tie that up, especially with a champion who has proven to be a little chinny, you know, why fuck it up? Why fuck up $100 million for everybody?
Man, fights like that always scare me because they're so wanted that they may not have who we want them.
Ferguson versus Nurmagomedov.
Yeah.
We're never going to get that fight in its prime now, you know, because of the Gaethje beating.
The biggest curse of all time. Let's take a moment to admire Dillian White's run, because this has been a hell of a run. It's been about 2.5 years he's been the number one contender. He never got the opportunity to fight against Wilder when Wilder was champion. And I'm sorry, he's not the number one contender to fight Joshua. He's the number one contender to fight against Tyson Fury.
Yes, you're right.
Yeah. So he never got to fight him, and now Tyson Fury's the champ. And he going into this fight, he already started putting out footage of how he's to school Fury in sparring, which at the end of the day, it is sparring footage.
It is, and Fury's notably inconsistent, so it is what it is. Are you really going to use that against him when it comes time to, like, you know, break down and make a bet? No.
And a lot of fighters have said, yeah, that camp was actually when Fury was shit.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah, like, he was not taking the sport seriously at the time.
He's inconsistent. So, yeah. He's a gypsy. Dirty, dirty gypsies.
So let's admire this. So he loses to Anthony Joshua, and that was back in 2000. That was 5 years ago. That was almost. And then he beats David Allen, when that was a big victory. He beats Chisora. He beats Hellenius. He KOs Lucas Brown, who was the undefeated, retired heavyweight champion from Australia. Then he beats Joseph Parker.
Big win.
Then he beats Chisora again.
Huge knockout.
Oscar Rivas, which was a pretty big win. And then he beat Marius Wok. Those are killers.
There's a lot of killers in there. There's not any necessarily easy fights. Who's the fucking easy fight in there? Hellenius? Still fucking tough as shit. You know what I mean? Like, everybody in there is a tough, difficult guy. Dillian White has, even though at the same time he has been popping positive like crazy. So it's difficult to, like, give him, like, that respect at the same time because, you know, behind the scenes, he's so positive on all that shit.
He's so positive.
he tests positive.
Absolutely. You know, I think this is a great opportunity. This is an opportunity for him to build a comeback. And I think one of the best fights that he could possibly make is Adam Kronowski, get one of those fights, or get one of those fights with those guys who are dangerous, but they're right outside the top five. They're in the top 10, but they're not exactly there yet.
Damn, somebody keeps fucking hitting up my Mac. Absolutely. And I think that's definitely the right move. Jesse, let's talk about the women's fight. Katie Taylor, great fight.
That was an amazing fight.
Who'd you score it for?
I scored the fight for Prasoon.
I actually scored the fight a draw.
Really?
Yeah, I thought it was a draw. I had it even.
I thought it was the second time they robbed that girl. I'm a big fan of Katie Taylor. I think she has phenomenal technique. But I think just... one of the things that Prasoon did was she had a lot of pressure, and she noticed that Katie Taylor is good fighting backwards for a period of time. She can't sustain that.
Mm-hmm.
And after a couple of rounds, that's when she started landing the bigger shots, imposing her bigger size and strength. And I think ultimately that won her the fight, but she didn't get the decision.
You know, it's funny. I thought this fight and I thought the Edgar Munoz fight reminded me of each other. You know what I mean? I think there was very similar dynamics in both of those fights. And in both of those fights, I felt like the decision that we came to was ultimately not the correct one. Although I thought Katie Taylor had rounds. I thought that she did well.
But if I were to go
like Pride Rules, though, like Street Yard, you know, who did better, I do think that Prasoon did a little better in the fight.
Yeah.
But the round system, I had it a draw.
And that's fair. I don't feel like Prasoon... like it wasn't a draw. I don't think she dominated the fight and completely got robbed, even though I did say she got robbed like a second ago. But I felt like she deserved the decision, but just by a slight edge. But the last fight, I thought it was a more definitive edge, and she didn't get the decision.
It's very Triple G Canelo-esque.
Yeah.
There you go.
So I think this is great. It sets up Katie Taylor for a rematch again against Jessica McCaskill at a higher weight class, and an opportunity for her to be undisputed at another weight class.
It would be huge. It's history making. It's, you know, put her as one of the greats. Although Delphine is going to be right there on her. And you know what else? It's kind of like Shevchenko Nunes.
That's what I was thinking of. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. It's exactly like that fucking one. That's exactly like it. Man,
you talk about Edgar versus,
yeah, while we're here, let's talk about it. So a lot of people had this fight scored different ways. Ultimately they give the nod by split decision to Frankie Edgar. His first time at 135, it's so weird watching him, and he's not way smaller than the other guy, isn't it?
Still smaller than
he was smaller than Pedro Munoz, right? Crazy. But I do think that at 145, I think those punches would have had more oomph on him. You know what I mean? I feel like the fact that it was 10 pounds lighter, because Munoz landed a lot of really good right hands.
I don't feel like it was really the weight. I feel it's the age. We're talking about a 40-year-old man.
But he absorbed them well.
But he doesn't move like he used to.
He doesn't move like he used to. He's nowhere near as evasive as he used to be. Nowhere near.
Yeah, I mean, there's a huge speed difference. There's a flexibility difference too. He's not as
he doesn't change levels as much.
Yeah, I feel like his body has a lot of wear and tear. It seems like he's
overcoming. It's like he has scar tissue through the ribs or something, where he's not bending and articulating through his ribs anymore.
So I feel like, the clock is ticking on Frankie.
Yeah.
Kudos to him for continuing. And I know that with his mindset, it's allowed him to achieve so much. There's no way you could tell that guy he can't. But if I was a betting man, I would say that I'm selling my stock on Frankie.
It's tough to justify him. He comes into the rankings as number 5. I do think that him versus Corey Sandhagen is an active live fight. But I think if a guy like Cody Garbrandt, Aljamain Sterling, Marlon Moraes, or Peter Yan got a hold of him, it would be a big, big problem.
Marlon Moraes' speed would destroy Frankie.
Oh, my God. He would be just running around him in circles. And I love Frankie.
Frankie's one of my all-time favorites, but his speed is not there. He's in a division of really fast guys. Aljamain's a really fast guy. And he's really lanky, and his kicks are great for that division. Cody hits like a fucking truck. Yeah. If Cody landed that many fucking right hands on him, I'm sorry, but it would be a big problem.
Didn't Munoz knock out Cody?
He did, but he also robbed him.
Yeah.
Still.
So, I mean, I would love Frankie to get one more big fight, because it would break my heart to see him lose to someone who doesn't become a world champion.
Who should he fight, though? Maybe Marlon.
I would say Marlon, or I would say Cody. I think Cody's a good, hey, man, I'm either good enough to be champion or I'm passing a torch.
And you know what? He's proven us wrong a bunch of times, so maybe he makes a deeper run here. If he were able to do this, this is more impressive than what Randy Couture did.
Yeah.
Straight up, because the division is deeper. It's a lighter weight class, which does matter more. You know, Randy Couture has basically admitted when he came out of retirement to beat Tim Sylvia, he's like, yeah, I thought heavyweight sucked and I could win. I thought they were real bad, and I was like, well, I could do that.
The comeback for Randy was when he moved down to fight against Liddell.
No, the comeback is for Tim Sylvia.
Because remember that he had been the heavyweight champion.
Mm-hmm.
Then he left, and then he lost to Rico Rodriguez.
And Josh Barnett.
And Josh Barnett, and people were like, you're done. You're 40, get out of here. And then he came back and beat Chuck Liddell.
Yep.
And then, yes.
And Tito Ortiz.
Yeah, he had a lot of comebacks.
Yeah. He had a lot of ups and downs. It was like he had as many comebacks as he had marriages. A lot of them. What else happened this weekend, Jesse? We talked about Katie Taylor. Let's talk about Joe Smith Jr.
Wow.
Knocked Eleider Alvarez out of the fucking ring. Holy shit, that dude hits hard.
Wow. We talked about him hitting his ceiling. Well, we're completely wrong.
He made fucking Eleider Alvarez hit the ceiling. It was unbelievable. Because he did the same fucking thing to Holyfield. And these are quality guys.
Hopkins,
sorry. These are quality guys that he fucking is knocking into the second row like they're in a movie or something.
What really earned my respect for the progression of Joe Smith Jr., and I'm saying this a lot more in retrospect, is the Jesse Hart fight. Because Jesse Hart could box his fucking ass off. And I know we made the excuse at the time, oh, maybe Jesse Hart moved up in weight and it didn't translate.
Mm-hmm.
Now looking back, that was Joe Smith that was making
that
happen.
Joe Smith did that. Joe Smith made that happen. Yeah, crazy. We kind of have to look back. It was kind of to tie Frankie Edgar back in. It was when Tyson Griffin lost to Frankie Edgar, and it was like, man, Tyson doesn't have it like we thought he did. It's like, no, he's fighting a fucking Hall of Famer to a split decision. It was a really good fight.
I can't believe there's only been 3 years that Joe Smith Jr. has been a professional fighter and he's not a construction worker, part-time fighter.
It's unbelievable, man. He's on that next level now. I was doubtful of him being able to overcome some of Eleider Alvarez's skills. And Eleider was doing great in the fight, but Joe Smith Jr. was able to just turn the lights out on him.
Well, I mean, it was a fair assessment because when he first became a professional fighter, and it's weird to say this because that was just like 3 years ago, after beating Hopkins, who was older, he fought against Sullivan Barrera, who's a skilled boxer,
mm-hmm.
and he was more of a brawler at that time. And then he fought Dmitry Bivol, who's also a phenomenal Olympian, one of the best out there, who for some reason does not box, and I haven't seen him fight in like years, maybe? It's been like, what?
It's been a minute since we've seen Bivol in action. When was the last time Bivol fought?
Yeah, Bivol has been a while, but Bivol completely outboxed him. But it'd be interesting to see him now as his progression, to see how he fights against, I would say, Artur Berdibiev. I would love to see that fight.
Man, I would love to see that. Oh, I guess the last time he fought was last October. He beat Gilbert Lennon Castillo.
When was the last time he fought someone relevant, though?
Joe Smith Jr.
Okay. Yeah, because it's been a while. Like, because sometimes, to be honest, if a fighter is fighting against someone who's not relevant, it's just hard for me to really...
even notice it's happening, because it happens every weekend. There's like six of them. Yeah. There's just too many to keep up with. Oh, I guess Danny Garcia beat a Butler. You know, I don't know. You know, it fucking happens.
Speaking of guys who fought a no-namer.
Fucking Jean Pascal had to fight somebody to fucking keep a Canadian world title he has.
It used to happen a lot with Mexican fighters. They would get like two or three fights in between their HBO fight.
Mm-hmm.
So they would fight on HBO, then they would fight some taxi driver in Tijuana. And that would be a big fight. They'll make some money there and come back.
It's like when Rich Franklin, to tie literally everything to UFC, Rich Franklin in his early run was undefeated. And then he left for like 6 months to a year and he came back and he had a loss. And it was to Lyoto Machida, I think. And it was when, like, it put Lyoto Machida on the map because everybody's like, who the fuck beat Rich Franklin? Like, he had already beat Evan Tanner and shit. Like, he was, like, a, you know, established, like, top 10 guy. And he, like, lost to Lyoto Machida. It was, like, 2-0 at the time.
Yeah, Lyoto Machida was, like, an internet darling at the time.
Yeah. Him and Glover Teixeira.
Yeah. I think Inoki was promoting Machida at the time.
Yes, you're correct.
Wow, long time. Speaking of fighters who fought a no-namer, Sean Porter fought his fucking ass off this past weekend against Sebastian Formella. What were your thoughts?
That Sean Porter only knows the one kind of fight. And if you happen to also bring that fight, you'll get into a fight of the year candidate. If not, this is what happens. Because you'll just get, like, buzzsawed slowly. You know what I mean? Like, it was like he was cooking him alive. He just, outworked him, bullied him, beat the shit out of him. It was a little demoralizing for the German kid after a little while, it looked like.
Yeah, well, what Sean Porter said was he expected to get a knockout. He had a couple of insides that were telling him, like, this is going to be a quick night for you. But then he said somewhere around the sixth round, he realized this guy's tough as shit. He could take a punch. We're going to go 12 rounds.
Great durability.
Yeah.
You can't knock the kid's durability. Holy shit, did he stick around.
Yeah, so he figured, hey, I'm not going to knock this kid out, so let's go ahead and have a boxing match. And he went ahead and planned for the rest of the 12 rounds from that point.
Looked amazing. Sean Porter's the man. Sean Porter, if I could pick, like, one guy in boxing that I would, if I could, like, wave a wand and he's a world champion, I would be Sean Porter. I would have him make a run at the title.
They say there's no reason why, I mean, with this eliminator, he's next in line for Danny Garcia versus Errol Spence Jr.
I'm fucking pulling it for him so bad. I'm such a Sean Porter mark. But to me, he would be the equivalent of, like, Eddie Guerrero winning, you know what I mean? Just like, oh, nice, one of the boys who wasn't supposed to get one.
I can't believe he hasn't been world champion yet.
It's crazy, right? What's going on?
No, he has been world champion. He lost to Kell Brook.
You're right. Even still, Sean Porter rocks. I want him to have a world title again.
I mean, I'd be nice to see him at
and look what's happened to the world since. Okay? Point proven. Give it back.
He also spoke about Terrence Crawford because him and Terrence Crawford are boys. And I didn't know that that's part of the reason why they haven't fought. They're really close friends from the time that they both used to spar each other for the Olympics.
Oh, crazy.
So they've always said that if the business makes sense, like they've had several meetings. If you don't have a big fight coming up where you're going to make a ton of money, and I don't have a big fight coming up where I'm going to make a ton of money, then let's fight each other. But as long as you have big business, then I have big business. So then, of course, the interview said, does that mean that the big business that Terrence Crawford has is Manny Pacquiao? And he just kind of started laughing, and he was like, you know, they're also throwing out Kell Brook's name out there, and they're doing stuff. So he might have leaked that maybe, or subliminally leaked that Manny Pacquiao and Crawford is next.
It would be amazing, but the only thing that worries me is that I feel like Terrence Crawford's camp would be a lot more careful about making sure Manny gets heavily tested, something that has not happened the last couple of minutes. As Manny Pacquiao has made this late Vitor Belfort-like run in his career, he has definitely been aided by looser drug testing results.
Yeah, because... he's made a huge run since he lost against Jeff Horn.
Yes. Would you like to talk about your boy?
Yeah.
So Jeff Horn up at middleweight. Took,
was it a junior middleweight?
I thought it was all the way up in regular middleweight.
No, it's junior middleweight. It's 154.
Okay. Takes on Tim Tizou. No way I'm pronouncing that correctly. But this Tizou. This occurred at 7 in the morning. You woke up and were very excited about it. You're very excited about it. And Tim absolutely beats the shit out of Jeff Horn. Tell me about the fight.
This was one of the biggest fights in Australian boxing history. It was also the first sporting event in the world that I know of. And they mentioned several times in there that it was going to have audience members there, no masks, 50% capacity, thousands of people in there. I think it was like 16,000, 17,000.
It was cool to see, yeah. Right? It was cool to like to see it.
The normal world.
it kind of made me like do a Joker laugh just with like how broken everything has become. That I just see like a crowd of people enjoying something and it like affects me to my core. I can't handle it.
Yeah, because unlike
is this what autism feels like?
It was like, you know, like we've seen the fake studio crowds with Fox.
It works. It looks good to me. I'll be honest, like WWE has their Thunderdome, yeah, where it's like all the like fake screens. It's not the same, but it's something.
Yeah.
Because I'm desperate. That's the message here. Piggy is desperate for anything. Me being Piggy.
But the Tim Tszyu versus Jeff Horn fight.
Oh, it was a total ass whooping.
Great to see audience members rivaling. So, for example, the way I found out is I started listening to podcasts about boxing in Australia. And apparently the rift between boxing fans is...
How fucking specific is that?
Apparently, like...
There's like three or four good Australian boxers.
Well, I mean, good for our standards, but for them, they love Dennis Hogan. You remember the guy who got knocked up? They love that dude down there.
I bet. They don't have that much.
Michael Zarafa, the guy who had the two-fight rivalry with Jeff Horn.
Yeah, it's a listen. I know we have a lot of listeners in Australia, but they're a country of well-intentioned idiots.
Well, the way that they describe it is, Jeff Horn is beloved by casual fans. Casual fans love Jeff Horn. All the smart fans hate Jeff Horn.
No, if you're a smart fan, you realize you're not supposed to have an opinion about Australian boxing.
Well, that's where
a smart fan comes in.
So if you listen to the commentary, all the legends always shit on Jeff Horn on the commentary because they feel like he should have left that trainer because the trainer's been known to give bad advice. So the trainer actually at the end of this fight was asking him, the referee was telling him to stop it. People were like, maybe you should stop this fight.
The referee has no business ever doing that, by the way, because you can stop it. You fucking... I hate when that happens. Referee's like, you guys might want to think about stepping in here. He's like, you might want to think about stepping in here.
But they did something that no trainer's supposed to do. Instead of stopping it for your fighter, they were like, we want you to say that you want to stop the fight. Did you notice that moment?
Yes. Horrible. Absolutely horrible. It completely emasculates your fighter. Take your pants off and tell them you quit. That's the only next step. You know what I mean? It's so emasculating. He's already quitting on a fucking stool, shirtless in front of the world. And now he has to say it. You can't even say it for him. It sucks.
And then a couple of rounds before that, they were like, do you have the money punch? Do you have one last punch left in you? Let us know if you're going to throw that Hail Mary. Like, how the fuck does he know?
What the fuck are you talking about?
Can you tell me to, like, strategy? How can I get this? How can I land it?
Look for your million-dollar baby punch, just naming boxing movies. Find your Rocky moment. Really have a Rocky III kind of fight in there. What the fuck are you talking about, dog? Yeah, he had a horrible corner.
I think what they were referring to is in the Michael Zarafa rematch. I don't know if you remember that round. He got knocked down. Zarafa was coming for the KO, but a hurt tiger is still a tiger, and he hit him with that out-of-nowhere knockout punch. But he was losing that whole fight.
Yes.
And they were expecting him to do that now, which was not going to happen. Especially because Tim Tszyu saw that fight, too.
It's a little, it's a little Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder-like. You know what I mean? It's like, when the guy is better than you at boxing, he can figure out how to stay away from a big, powerful shot like that. Yeah, it was fucked up. And Jeff Horn took a lot of damage that he didn't have to. I don't know how much to care about this. Help me.
Oh, well, so...
How good is Tim Tszyu? Because to me, it looks like Jeff Horn sucked in this fight. So I can't even accurately place Tim Tszyu with the rest of the division because this is a depleted Jeff Horn who's not even at the weight class that he had any success at. Is Tim as good as Michael Zarafa? Should I give a shit about that?
Well, that's the thing. So Tim Tszyu with this fight actually got himself ranked as one of the top 154 pounders in the world. He's not.
Where is he? 132?
Huh?
That made it sound like he was in the top 154.
Pound. Yeah, in the weight class. The junior middleweight division, he's now ranked, and he's not next in line, but he is in line. So this is one of the toughest divisions in all of boxing. So where he falls on here, given his age and his experience and where he is, we don't know where he will be with his progression. But he is now in the mix. He's probably going to go the route to fight against the champion, Patrick Teixeira, who's a phenomenal knockout puncher from Brazil. but he's not the best champion in the weight class.
No, a lot of people would prefer to fight Tashira over a lot of the other killers in super middleweight.
You have Charlo's on this weight class.
Lions only.
You have Jason Rosario.
Difficult, but not the worst worst.
Julian J-Rock Williams.
Very difficult.
Jared Hurd.
Very difficult.
Arizona.
Although Jared Hurd might be having problems. Laura, difficult.
Laura's also aging, though.
Laura's aging, but Laura's always going to make you look bad.
Someone pointed this out the other day. He was in the first fight night.
Damn, that is crazy.
Like, Laura's been around.
That's like when you realize that Jim Miller was in, like, UFC 8 or whatever. I don't know when he started. That was a long time ago.
I was about to say, I was like, UFC 8? Goddamn. You have Tony Harrison.
Very good.
Liam Smith.
Also good.
Patrick Teixeira.
There's too many world champions. This list goes on forever.
And then Eric Lubin.
A little vulnerable.
Erickson Lubin, yeah.
A little vulnerable.
And I don't know this guy, Brian Castaño. So he's
so how good could he be? And we're calling him a world champion.
No, he's not a world champion. But that's the top 10. This is the top 10.
Oh, I thought you were giving me a list of like, I was like, maybe he's kind of Ring Magazine. Like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, this is your top 10 of the weight class, and Tim Tszyu is probably top 15.
Fair.
So he's now cracked the top 20. He's in there, but he's maybe three fights away from a title shot.
Right on. It's going to be a difficult top 10 to crack.
Oh, it's going to be difficult. I would move down, move up. Move down is a great move if you can, because it's the bigger payday. It's just as tough guys. I mean, you're fighting your Sean Porters, your Errol Spence, but the payday is significantly higher. Lose 7 pounds. If I'm going to lose, let me lose for millions instead of hundreds of thousands.
Absolutely. It only makes sense. Looking at the last week, the only fight that we have left to talk about, I think, is Ryan Bader versus Vadim Nemkov.
Phenomenal.
Huge knockout. I thought it was a great stoppage, actually. Nemkov looks great, picks up the 205-pound title. This dude's the truth. This dude's, I think he's a top five 205-pounder.
He was the third best Ryzen prospect, and now he's a phenomenal player in Bellator and just basically all of MMA. It'll be great to see his rise. I think he's going to be a long-time champion, and I think this is going to be one of those guys that we'll look at and say, I wonder what would happen if he fought the UFC champion.
Yes, I think you're right. And I think that the fact that both these divisions are kind of crowning new champions at the same time can really help build that.
Wouldn't it be cool if Prozhaka and him were both champions at the same time?
That would be badass. That would be really badass. Then you would absolutely have grounds to have that. You know, that's going to be a very widely discussed thing if that happens.
That'll always be one of those, like, smart mark kind of comments of, hey, do you know who's the one who beat Nemkov back in the day?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Did Prochaska? Yeah, he did. You're right. I forgot about that. With that long-ass 10-minute first round, he just beat the shit out of him. So, Nemkov, his last couple fights, he's looked amazing. He beat Phil Davis. He beat Rafael Carvalho. Now he beats Ryan Bader, who, remember, in the UFC only lost to, like, the Jon Joneses and Anthony Johnsons and Alexander Gustafsons of the world. This guy was an elite 205er and still is. It's a huge win. I'm super happy for the guy. He looked crazy good.
Let's talk about the prospect, the guy who I think is a future world champion. I'm a big fan of this guy. I'm going to mess up his name, and that's because it's Eastern European. Yaroslav Amosov.
Actually, you got it. There you go. Yeah, he's amazing. Undefeated, 24-0, Ukrainian, super tough kid. Beat Ed Ruth, which I think is a huge win. He beat Eric Silva. He beat Gerald Harris. He's beat a ton of really, really good guys. He looks great. He picks up a doctor stoppage in this one. And he just continues his ass whooping ways.
So it says here he's a welterweight.
Factual.
He fought at 175. What weight class is he really landing in?
I think ultimately he would be at 170. I feel like a lot of times they will give these guys, because they want to turn him over quickly, they just won't make him cut the extra weight. Especially if they feel like it's a little bit of a stay busier fight. You know what I mean? Catch weight with Bellator, you can usually see that one of the guys is a big betting odds favorite, right? Because mm-hmm. It's just him staying busy and getting fights. They would used to give Vanderlei Silva and Pride a heavyweight fight. You know what I mean? Just fucking get in there. But then you're going to fight Quentin Rampage Jackson, make your weight class.
So he'll eventually make 170 again.
Yeah, he fought 170 against Ed Roof his last fight.
Okay. Cool,
yeah.
Cool. So who's the 170 Bellator champion?
Doug Lima.
Oh, that'd be a tough fight.
That'd be a super tough fight. That's it's a great division. Yeah. Rory McDonald, you got a ton of amazing guys at 170 for them. See, Paul Daly, MVP.
See, I love it when it's a weight class that's pretty heavy and has a good prospect. I don't like it when it's just one prospect in a dead weight class.
Take Nurmagomedov on the rise versus what your Jiří Prochazka kind of is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where it's like, man, Jiří, like, he's 1-0 in the UFC. He's ranked number 6. You know what I mean?
Versus Khabib. Jones' rise.
John Jones had kind of the perfect rise in the UFC, didn't he?
Because everybody was just getting old as he was getting in his prime.
I think that's a little overstated. I don't think Machida got old until later. Because he would drop down and earn a title shot at a very tough middleweight.
Yeah.
And I think Shogun was not old. I think he got made old.
Yeah.
By that fight. I think that was a huge ass whooping. And I think that kind of started things off for him.
Yeah.
He entered the cage young. Fucked up. So, but yeah, Dynamo is Amosov's nickname. He looked amazing. He's the truth. He's the truth, Bubba. We're seeing amazing prospects this year.
No, absolutely, absolutely. I think that, I mean, whatever Ryzen did is great because I think a couple other heavyweights have come over and done well. And, I mean, I'm just starting to see kind of like the work that they did in terms of scouting is now paying off in MMA.
Yeah, they really had their finger their ear to the ground, right? Their finger to the pulse.
Yeah. Speaking of Ukrainians, we have another Ukrainian coming back. Victor Postol fights this weekend against Jose Ramirez, a fight that's been scheduled several times post-COVID pre-COVID, and then COVID hit, and now we got postponed again. So we're finally going to get it August 29th, this Saturday, for the WBO title. How do you see this fight?
So this is a super tough fight, two of the toughest super lightweights in the world. Jose Ramirez, I would probably say, has a little bit more momentum as the undefeated fighter. He is coming off of a fantastic TKO over Maurice Hooker, and he's looked really, really good. Meanwhile, Victor Postol has stumbled a little bit in the past. He hasn't had a big win in a while, and he's got the two losses to Crawford and to Taylor. I would say that Jose Ramirez is probably a little bit better suited, but Victor Postol is a super technical fighter, has a lot of good reach, uses his length well. How do you see the fight?
Man, I think this is a tougher fight than most people anticipate. Now, I could just be reading into the hype, but I do remember that hearing that after the Terrence Crawford loss, Victor Postol experienced a lot of injuries, and we didn't see the best Victor Postol going into the Taylor fight. So it was a little bit deceiving of where he is. That's why he took a layoff, and especially with everything that's happened, he's been able to recuperate, and we're going to see a better Victor Postol coming into this fight.
That would be fantastic. I hope that they're right, but I can only go off the performance, right?
Yeah.
Everybody coming into every fight says they're the best they've ever been. His last two fights, he still did not go out and impress. He didn't even stop the guys, right? And he was fighting no names. So that's also concerning.
This is the guy who knocked out Lucas Matisse.
Exactly. Yeah. And now he's not knocking out Mohamed Mamoun. Come on.
Yeah.
A little different. There's not a little backstep in that performance.
Mohamed got a chin, though.
Oh, we got you in, though. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I've never seen Muhammad fight.
He takes out C.R. Ozgul in a decision. Come on.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, the Victor Postol, who's knocking out Matisse, would probably have gotten that.
So this is, like, basically one half of the eliminator to unify the belts. So the winner of Ramirez Postol is going to fight the winner of Josh Taylor versus Apinun Kongsong.
So Josh Taylor.
Yeah. Apinun Kongsong, whatever his name, Kongsong, he's actually a really good Muay Thai kickboxer who's become an undefeated boxer. He's 16-0, but the reason he's so highly ranked is because of his accomplishments in Muay Thai. So this is going to be a very interesting fight. I mean, I don't think he's going to win, but I think he's going to present a lot of different looks for Josh Taylor, so it's going to be an interesting fight.
Nicky Holtzkin did great.
Yeah.
Man, let's see it. You know, fighting is fighting. Connor won so many rounds off of Floyd. People have been getting so mad about that online. What is, was that at the anniversary of the fight or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, because have you happened. Been seeing memes about it? Like, no. I've been seeing, like, Conor memes all over my fucking Twitter. It must have happened on an anniversary. Yeah, Josh Taylor should get through that fight. It would be very surprising if Josh Taylor does not get through.
How big of a star would you be if you upset Josh Taylor?
That would be huge, especially in the UK. Man, looking ahead for UFC, we have a big main event. Speaking of Eastern European light heavyweights, we're fucking everybody up. Alexander Rakic is taking on Anthony Lionheart Smith. Anthony Smith is coming off of a really bad ass whooping on the hands of Glover Teixeira that really didn't happen that long ago.
It really didn't have to happen like that.
It didn't have to happen like that, but he did take it. At the end of the day, he took the damage that he took. Alexander Rakic, on the other hand, he did lose his last fight, a split decision to Volkan Ozdemir, who also makes people look really bad. But he's
except looked, for Prozhaka.
Except for Prozhaka. But he's looked great in the UFC. Knocked out Devin Clark. He knocked out Jimmy Manuel with a huge first-minute head kick. I think that the conventional wisdom might be that, or at least the way that I look at it, is you have to be a little concerned that Anthony Smith came back a little too fast.
100%.
Yeah, how can you not, right? And especially against somebody who obviously hits as well as Rakic does, I think that that can be a real... It's a real concern for me. What do you think?
I think that this is, I don't know, Anthony Smith, that first fight against, that comeback against Teixeira, he looked great. I think the first couple rounds, it looked like the best I'd ever seen him.
Yeah, he looked amazing. That's right. He looked so good. He burned himself out.
So it'll be interesting. I mean, has his body recovered? Or, I mean, did he take that as a learning lesson? Typically, when I see quick comebacks like that, I wouldn't really bet on the guy. So I'm actually going to go against him. I think Rakic has this one. I hope for Anthony Smith because he's a very charismatic guy. I think he's good for the sport. Kind of like Joe Smith Jr. I want some of these American name guys to be relevant because it's hard to keep saying these Eastern European names.
Anthony Smith is easy on the mouth. That did not... I'm picking against him just for that. I was going to fucking go the other way and pick him, but no. Alexander Rakic wins.
Yeah, because he makes your mouth happy.
No, the opposite. He's very mad at my mouth. Yeah, so I'm picking Rakic in that fight. But the co-main event is fire as well. Neil Magny is taking on Robbie Lawler. Robbie Lawler is a later replacement for this fight.
Who was the original person?
Originally, it was supposed to be Jeff Neal.
That's right. I really, really, really wanted to see that fight. I'm a huge Jeff Neal fan. What happened to Jeff Neal?
Didn't he, something, like, he got really sick or something, or, like, he got hit by a car. So it was a medical thing.
Wow.
And it was actually, like, kind of severe. Messed up, especially because I'm pretty sure he still works at an Olive Garden or something. So yeah. There might be a GoFundMe out there floating for Jeff Neal.
That sucks.
That sucks. But the UFC is building a hotel for all the fighters. That's pretty cool. So they got money. Yeah. Neil Magny is taking on Robbie Lawler. Neil Magny has looked good his last few fights. He just beat Anthony Rocco Martin. That's a good win. He beat that tough Chinese guy, Jiang Long Li. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm getting pretty close on that, hopefully. But he tends to lose to powerful guys, right? He gets knocked out by Ponzinibbio. He gets knocked out by Lorenz Larkin. He struggles with power hitters. And they don't come more power hitter than Robbie Lawler. What do you think?
Man, it's a tough one. It's a tough one.
But Robbie Lawler's been in decline, now that I say that.
Robbie Lawler, I mean, we'll talk about UFC 8. Robbie Lawler's 40 years old. I'm rounding up just very slightly. But he's been around since, like, the single digits of UFC. I want to say that he debuted, wow, it looks like he debuted.
No, like UFC 37, yeah.
So he's been around since UFC 37.
Against Aaron Riley, my friend Aaron Riley.
He made his first MMA, he did his first MMA bout in 2001.
I believe he was 17. I don't even think he was 18 yet. And he's had a long storied career. But his last five fights, he's lost four of them, and the only one he won was over Donald Cerrone, which is a good win. Yeah, he's been less competitive, though. His last loss against Colby in 2019, about a year ago, he never got out of the starting blocks. Colby was able to overwhelm him with pressure and with volume, and he was just never able to get off. Neil can bring pressure and can bring volume, is their concern. They kind of play into each other's weaknesses, right? So I'm interested to see how that lines up.
The Colby Covington fight was almost a year ago today.
Yeah, it was just gonna. It's gonna last just over 1 year.
And that's what. And that's what we liked. I mean, that's when we realized that Colby was legit.
Yes, that was a big step up for Colby.
The Ben Askren fight, that was controversial.
The
Dos Anjos fight was super close, if I remember that correctly.
Yes, yeah, it was.
The Cerrone fight, that was super close too. And then he got KO'd by Woodley, and then he was the champion. So we haven't really necessarily
It's inconsistent, seen... right? Yeah. It's inconsistent. He'll show up, he'll do fine. But Neil Magny, not necessarily the same caliber of fighter, one would assume, as world champion Rafael Dos Anjos, world champion Tyron Woodley, world champion in different organizations, Ben Askren. You know what I mean? It is what it is.
To be fair, Colby Huffington was a world champ.
An interim world champion, yeah. Right? Yes, correct. So he has fought really tough guys.
If he loses to Neil Magny, then we know that...
It's the first time he hasn't lost to somebody on that level, and it will be a big thing. I'm going to pick Neil. I'm going to go upset. Why not?
Is he not the favorite? Because I think going into this fight, I think the momentum would be that Robbie Lawler would lose.
Would you think so? I actually don't know. Let me check the odds. So while I check the odds, talk about the fight.
So this isn't the first time we've seen a losing streak in Robbie Lawler's career. He's actually experienced this like three times over. So if you look at the time period between 2003 and 2004, he had lost three losses. He was 3-1 during that time period.
Neil Magny actually is the favorite, which surprises me, and I might put a little money on Robbie because of that. Not because I think he'll win, but because I think he's being undervalued.
If we look at 2009 to 2012, Robbie Lawler had a huge losing streak during that period as well. So he's had big losing streaks and turned them around before. I mean, that was 10 years ago, but and almost 20 years ago. But he has had these comebacks. So let's see if he still has it in him to be able to pull it one more time. Does he have one more comeback left?
It'll be a huge win for Neil Magny if he can pull it.
Yeah.
And nobody's worked harder than Neil Magny for these big wins. So it would be a 100%. Nice thing to see. Man, anything else coming up this weekend?
Yeah, there was another really good fight that I wanted to touch on this card. The opener, Magomed Akhavalov.
Man, it sounds great to me. I'm already in.
Yeah. Versus what?
Halfway through, sounds somebody. What weight class? Give me a weight class.
This is lightweight.
Right on. I'm getting to the card.
Yeah, it's going to be a lightweight battle. It's about these two Eastern European guys that are very controversial first fight.
Ankalaev versus Kutalaba.
Kutalaba, yeah.
Yeah.
Kutalaba, the Super Hulk, is back.
Third light heavyweight, by the way.
What'd I say?
Lightweight.
Oh, light heavyweight. This is going to be a very interesting bout. I will 100% know the name of the winner of this fight next time. I mean, that's what they're fighting for. They're fighting for me to go on Hooked on Phonics and either learn some Moldovan name or some Dagestani name.
Perfect.
Just based on history.
You 100% know about the Moldovan flag from webcam pornography. Do not tell me different. Do not fucking lie to me and tell me different. Where do you know the Moldovan flag from?
The beautiful women. I mean,
okay. A lot of Instagram profiles, right? A lot of Instagram profiles. Their first fight, Kutalaba comes out. He does get buzzed by some punches. He starts to say, and he claims that he was acting like he was more hurt than he was, but the referee sees this and thinks that he's more hurt than he is and stops the fight. Should the referee have done that? Maybe, maybe not. He probably shouldn't have walked around pretending like the referee should have stopped the fight. Ultimately, I think Ankalaev hits like a truck. I think Kutalaba still has some defensive liabilities. I'm going to go with Ankalaev to win.
Yeah, I would say consistency's sake, I think that's a pretty good bet, but I think it would be a phenomenal fight. I think this is a good fight where it's a good name for him to have in his record, and it's also something that would elevate him to the next level.
Absolutely. Kutalaba has been tough. He was really tough in his loss to Glover Teixeira, and he had some really good moments against Glover. But, yeah, ultimately, he's just he's inconsistent. So anything else this week, Jesse?
I think that's it.
Man, look, people know how to get a hold of you.
Follow me on social media, Jay Rebus Comedy on Instagram and Jay Rebus on Facebook.
And follow me on Twitter at BustaFreak98 and on Instagram at MorganginoBJJ. And we'll be back next week here on Fighters Block.